Before I introduce our next speaker, I'd like to read a note from Rion Eisler, who very sadly cannot be with us here tonight because of ill health. Sigh. I know. Well, Rion writes, "I had hoped to be there tonight to introduce Maria, and I'm really disappointed. I can't, particularly because of her new work, a culmination of her work. I've asked Star to send everyone my greetings and my love. So I send you that, and we all miss her, and we all send her wishes for a speedy recovery." Dr. Gloria Ornstein has graciously stepped in to introduce Maria, and I'm very happy that she's here. She's a professor at the University of Southern California with a joint appointment in the Department of Comparative Literature and the Program for the Study of Women and Men. Well known for her writing on the women of surrealism, she also co-created the Woman's Salon for Literature in New York City. Girls. Okay. She is the author of 3 books: The Theater of the Marvelous, Surrealism and the Contemporary Stage, Reweaving the World, The Reemergence of Ecofeminism, and The Reflowering of the Goddess. She uniquely combines her academic background with an interest in shamanism, and she is a student, or was a student, of the last shaman of Samiland. She told me that 2 things that she was proud of was receiving a Vesta Award from the Los Angeles Women's Building, and that, yes. And that both her daughters are getting their PhDs this spring. She also says that knowing Maria, she can no longer be a pessimist. Gloria?
And since I was a student of a shaman, I want to say that there must be a meaning in the fact that my car is blocking something out there, and I had to give my key away. That's very symbolic. I used to always lose my keys, and my shaman told me that, you know, it means you can't find the key or you found the key. And I hope to say that this is symbolic of the fact that we are now receiving the key. And we're gathered together this evening to celebrate the publication of Maria Gimbutas' most recent volume in her series of groundbreaking studies on old Europe's goddess civilization, this one entitled Civilization of the Goddess, The World of Old Europe. This massive tome completes her goddess trilogy of progressively more detailed and ever more expansive studies that began with goddesses and gods of old Europe and was followed by the language of the goddess. We have also turned out in large number tonight to honor Maria for her monumental contribution to knowledge, for restoring our true but buried history to us, for literally excavating it from the depths of Mother Earth, and for bringing it out into the light. In my opinion, it is this kind of illumination, both of our scientific data and of our minds, that constitutes a true enlightenment. It is indeed a rare privilege for one scholar to meet another in her lifetime whose greatness is so evident and whose work has not only overturned all previous paradigms, but has also set the stage for the actual legitimation of one's own most radical conclusions obtained through completely different searches and quests. Maria Gimbutas' reconstruction of the language and the civilization of the goddess in old Europe has done precisely that for me and for the many other searchers, questers, and creators gathered here tonight in her honor. Her vast research has pieced together for the first time the enormous puzzle whose archaeological data, gleaned from a diversity of objects and structures, unearthed at important sites in what she has called Old Europe, span the millennia from the Upper Paleolithic through the early patriarchal historical period. Her new book, Civilization of the Goddess, now makes it crystal clear that civilization was not typified either by war, by the domination of one sex over the other, or by the domination of humans over non-human nature. In Maria's words, we read, and I quote, "I reject the assumption that civilization refers only to androcratic warrior societies. It is a gross misunderstanding to imagine warfare as endemic to the human condition. The old European social structure was in direct contrast with the Indo-European system that replaced it. As archaeological, historical, linguistic, and religious evidence shows, old European society was organized around a theocratic communal temple community, guided by a queen priestess, her brother or uncle, and a council of women as the governing body. In spite of the revered status of women in religious life, the cemetery evidence throughout the 5th and most of the 4th millennia BC does not suggest any imbalance between the sexes or any subservience of one sex to the other. It suggests instead a condition of mutual respect, unquote. Maria's work is not only a monumental achievement, but it is also a great gift to us, for it gives us real hope for the future, for the possibility of creating once again a civilization that can reclaim those life-affirming, egalitarian, peaceful values that have characterized the greater part of our human history, values that have proved to be viable and to have endured. It happened once. It lasted thousands of years, and it was real. It can certainly happen again. With these three monumental tomes about the goddess civilization before us, we now have the ultimate proof that the Eden we have dreamed of was once real. Never again can the utopian dreamers amongst us be accused of being unrealistic. From Maria's books, Goddesses and Gods of Old Europe, The Language of the Goddess, and now The Civilization of the Goddess, we know for certain that when we speak of humans living in peace and equality with each other and in harmony with nature, when we speak of a time when there was no separation between the secular and the sacred, of a time in which creation was symbolized by a mother goddess who was giver of life, wielder of death, and regeneratrix, we are not speaking about a mythical paradise conjured up in some fantasy, nor are we resorting to a belief in what some have mistakenly called the Neolithic mystique. We are speaking of a time that was actually real and that endured for thousands of years. Maria Gimbutas's oeuvre literally means the difference for us between being labeled insane or sane. I would like... I would like to illustrate what I mean by citing an example from one of the authors I discuss in my book, The Reflowering of the Goddess. Her name is Jeanne Ivrard, and she's from France. The female narrator of Jeanne Ivrard's novel, Mother Death, in French called Mère la Mort, Mother Death for the great goddess of life, death, and regeneration, has been put into a mental institution because she has memory of a time when the earth was sacred, when a reverence for the goddess prevailed. Only archaeological evidence of the kind Maria Gimbutas has unearthed can defend her sanity and save her from the torture of incarceration as a mad woman. She writes of her memories, which society labels as her madness, the following, quote, "On an island before the invaders, a statue discovered, a woman, her breast bare, on her head a dove, feminine singular, in her hands serpents, death mother, your birds, your reptiles, I'm running towards you, seeking your name." Unquote. This is the historic image of the Cretan goddess. The protagonist also remembers a time when the invaders came and destroyed that civilization. Mother Death, the invaders came and said, "You were two. They've changed our history, but haven't been able to kill our memory. The conquerors came, and that's all we know." For Jeanne Ivrard's narrator, the experience of colonization and conquest by the androcratic invaders, what Maria calls the Indo-Europeans, is real history, not a delusion and not a mere fantasy. Her narrator comes from the world we all lived in before the publication of Maria Gimbutas's work. The existence of Maria's great work will now actually legitimate the sanity of people like this protagonist, who, whether through folklore or myth, or via encounters with women of ancient wisdom, or memories that occur during dreams, visions, pilgrimages to sacred goddess sites, in whatever way they come about, these women recover psychic intimations and psychic knowledge of the existence of the world of old Europe. And they know that humans were once capable of living in harmony with each other, with nature, and with the sacred. Maria's wealth of knowledge has endlessly enriched our symbolic lives. Now that we have recovered our ancient goddess heritage, we speak a new language. This language is composed of the many glyphs and symbols that Maria has revealed to us. Our dreams, our art, our imaginings are now filled with labyrinths, spirals, meanders, discs, bands, chevrons, triangles, crescents, ripples, spindles, whorls, bands, double axes, cup marks, rosettes, bylines, trilines, crossbands, M's, V's, and X's, to name a few. We are dreaming of bird goddesses, eye goddesses, snake goddesses, waterfowls, rams, deer mother, bear mother, owl goddesses, vulture goddesses, butterflies of regeneration, cosmogonic eggs, horns of consecration, and the triple goddess and the pregnant goddess, to name only a few. We converse about cultures and places formerly unknown to most of us. Cucuteni, Vincha, Akelion, Starchevo, Sesklo, Dolny Vestonici, Lepienski Vir, Chatelhuyuk, Knossos, and the Cycladic culture. We understand the importance of radiocarbon dating, of red ochre and amber, and we speak freely about the breasts, buttocks, and the vulva of the goddess. Yes, our language has been liberated. We are beginning to speak the language of regeneration that expresses the powers of nature and the cosmos in human, animal, and plant forms. The language that Jean Evrard's mad protagonist yearned for when she said about the invaders, "They perverted language. They said I had lost my mind. I can't find the forgotten language, the language from before the invaders, the language in which words mean their opposites, the language that liberates, the language even older than the statue with the naked breasts, the language of souls of the dead in stones, the languages of your caverns paintings, your soils pottery, your ashes silica, the language of the naked woman, her thighs like mountains. They pillaged your tombs and wonder why they don't know anything. They say I have a sickness. They give it a name. They say I'm unstable, precarious, lunatic. They say they want to cure me. They want to cure me of what exactly? Of the world's creation? Of death and rebirth? They say they're going to cure me. Of what? Life itself? I think that bringing to light in these voluminous tomes the lost world of our great goddess heritage is like the kind of work it took for ancient megalithic peoples to transport those heavy stones that weighed many tons from country to country until they reached the exact power spot on the earth where they could create their stone circle or their sacred site. Maria's books are the stone circles and sacred sites of our enlarged, energized psychic mind fields. And the 1970s, 1980s, and now the 90s, particularly in LA, constitute that place of power on planet Earth where Maria's stone circle can speak most to us most forcefully. Never again can we be reduced to less than this vast heritage now that we possess it thanks to her. For Maria Gimbutas, the stones literally do speak. Her works ferret out the spirit of the stones, the meaning of those evocative, eloquent objects whose stories have been muted. She decodes and deciphers their foreign language, their signs, symbols, glyphs, and forms, so that they can speak to us as well in their very unique means of expression through their energies and through their markings. Maria Gimbutas can actually read the language of the great goddess cultures of old Europe as fluently as we read English, and that language communicates to her in a manner similar to the way the language of our grandparents' foreign tongues might speak to us today had we heard them in our early childhood. Coming from comparative literature and women's studies, fields in which we are continually debating points such as, what is a female hero? Can there be a female hero? Should there be a female hero? I have to say, quite frankly, that I have known female heroes, and that a person who restores at least 10 millennia of women's history to me now is a hero in my book. Yet this achievement has not come to Maria without a great deal of struggle and suffering. Those of us who are familiar with her biography know that she has gone out on a limb and literally risked her life in order not only to restore this knowledge to us, but to ensure that it would be inscribed and enshrined within the mainstream of the most highly respected academic teachings forever. She has done this at great peril to her own health. She has created and attended conferences abroad when others of us might have stayed at home in bed. She has repeatedly risen out of circumstances that have compromised her health to bring this critical information to those places where it would be disseminated in such a way as to accrue the greatest form of recognition and the widest possible diffusion. There is a great lesson to be learned from this historic achievement. Maria has recovered a heritage for us, but history teaches us that this time we must commit this information to memory in case it be lost again. Not only must we teach all the information that her works have unearthed, and not only must we make certain to preserve it and keep it alive, but we must also absolutely commit it to memory and pass it on via the oral tradition. For we now know that if a civilization that lasted for millennia can be destroyed, and if libraries can be demolished overnight, obviously all the information stored on computers can easily be erased as well. Ultimately, human memory must once again become a living repository for the history and the epic of goddess civilization. And we must also learn from Maria's example. We must also learn from Maria's example to have the courage of our convictions and to be strong enough to take risks in order to restore light to the world. Maria Gimbutas has written over 20 books. Some say 30, some say 40. I just picked 20. You can find them all in the UCLA library. I once tried to take them out and realized that I could not carry them because I needed a vehicle to transport them. Like the language of the goddess and civilization of the goddess, they are all extremely large and very heavy. But it is precisely this weight that, like the stones teletransported to Stonehenge, prove the immensity of the miracle that has occurred. In this case, the miracle is that of the resurrection of the lost goddess civilization within the very heart of patriarchal history. In women's studies, we've also been talking about the patriarchal construction of the dichotomy of nature versus culture, with males being identified with creation of culture and females with nature. Goddess studies show us that our ancient matristic civilization did not construct such a duality, and that, in fact, in goddess-centered cultures, both women and men were identified with both nature and culture, and all were considered sacred. When I thought about the numerous cities where the goddess had been revered that lie buried inside the very crust of our planet Earth, I began to realize that in this concrete way, we could actually say that culture and nature are fused as one, and that the energies from goddess cultures that exist inside the Earth that archaeologists are beginning to excavate, that these very energies from the prayers and rituals dedicated to the Great Mother over centuries of our past are now commingling with the roots of trees and with the strata of earth and rock of which our planet is formed. Thus, it is obvious that goddess culture has become one with nature, perhaps in order to teach us this important lesson, that everything is interconnected quite literally and in the very deepest, most concrete of ways. As we retrieve the remains of the mother goddess civilization of old Europe from inside the very bowels of the earth via archaeology, the expression that the earth is our mother is truer than ever before. Some of you may know that I was the student of a shaman. Classically, shamans journey to the lower world or to the middle or upper worlds to retrieve a lost soul. By delving into the very center of the earth and bringing knowledge of goddess civilization, its ethos and mythos to us, Maria has, in a way, performed a kind of shamanic healing. She has restored our lost soul to us. Her triple goddess trilogy is the very shape of our lost matristic soul, a soul that was stolen from us by the invaders that she documents historically to corroborate the reality of Jean Ivrard's protagonist's memory. Our lost goddess soul has now been restored to us by your shamanic and scholarly act of soul retrieval, Maria. And from now on, we will feel healed of our alienation from the ancient roots of our source of power and wisdom. Maria, as we welcome you tonight, and as we thank you formally for your travail and your teachings, we want you to know that we constitute your support community. All of us who have come to this celebration will come away with a vision of the past and a hope for the future that we shall pass on to those around us. In this way, guided by your insight and inspiration, we shall be armed with the needed documentation to support all our arguments and our struggles, whether in the political, academic, or private arenas, for peace, for ecological balance, for gender harmony, and for a transformation in the values of our civilization, so that together we may bring about a reflowering of life on our planet as soon as possible. Welcome, Maria Gimbutas.